We are a couple minutes ahead of schedule, and I think we'll go ahead and get started anyway. We've got about 45 minutes. We do have 45 minutes ahead of us, and of which we will be asking questions. And at the beginning and the end, I will ask you to make an opening statement and then a closing statement at the end. And I'll give you a few minutes' notice when we're getting close to the end so that you can prepare for that as well. So with that, if you'd like to make a brief opening statement, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Hasten, and I moved to Minneapolis from southeastern Wisconsin over 17 years ago to attend the University of Minnesota right after graduating high school. Over one-third of my life later, I hold 2 degrees from the University of Minnesota, a bachelor's of cultural studies and comparative literature from the Twin Cities campus, and a master's in advocacy and political leadership from UMD. In fact, I still have student loans that I pay every month. My personal investment and loyalty to the university run deep. Originally, I came to the university to study music as I play the violin. Through exploring coursework and other subjects, that passion evolved into cultural studies and comparative literature major. I attended school full-time for my first couple of years, then found that working full-time and finishing my undergraduate part-time was the most successful combination for me. I was even able to study abroad in Spain for a semester to complement my Spanish minor. I've worked part-time student positions at Campus Mail, as well as becoming a full-time employee in epidemiology at the School of Public Health, where I worked for 6 years. The university was able to offer me all of these different combinations to become a productive citizen, which is something that I admire and I find inspiring. As a regent, I want to make sure the university continues to offer access and ways to keep college affordable, no matter which path students choose, just like it did for me. I live in the very core of the 5th Congressional District, just south of downtown Minneapolis. The 5th Congressional District is unique from the rest of Minnesota in a lot of different ways. We have the main university campus located here. We have the majority of students living here. We have the majority of the university's employees living here. And we have the richest people in Minnesota living here, as well as the poorest people in Minnesota living here. And, in fact, the university has the most economic impact here. Through my career at the university, nonprofits in Minneapolis, and in my current position at the Minnesota AFL-CIO, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of working people. These are people striving for jobs that can create, that can support a family and a middle-class lifestyle. I have to look no further than to my neighbors in the 5th Congressional District to see that, and see the huge part that the university has in helping to prepare a workforce through its commitment to excellence. As a regent, it will be with great care and stewardship that I approach policies that support this top education and good jobs. As you can see, I'm also a young person. Through the National AFL-CIO, I sit on the AFL-CIO Young Worker Advisory Council. This is a national advisory council that was created to help shape the directions that 12 million unionized workers take to maintain and develop rights in the workplace. My role supports the top officers in developing policies and programs that unions take to empower young workers. As you are well aware, young people today face the most challenges of any recent generation: mountains of debt, finding full-time work that pays a living wage, and affordable housing, just to name a few of the things. I bring a perspective that may be different from the majority of the Board of Regents, current Board of Regents. Whereas we share the fact that we are working professionals, I'm still close enough to my school days that I can relate to students that attend the university. Also, I work for working people, some of whom are professionals as well as other blue-collar workers. I can relate to these groups, which together with contacts in other sectors can create what's best for the University of Minnesota. Other leadership roles I hold include a board position with Witness for Peace in the Upper Midwest, which works at the grassroots level to promote awareness and activism regarding U.S. policies in Latin America. We reach over 1,000 people a year just in membership alone in the Midwest. I'm a board member at my local union, which is the Minnesota Newspaper and Communications Guild, which has over 2,300 members, including reporters and staff at the two major Twin Cities newspapers. And from 2004 to 2011, I sat on the board at Stevens Square Community Organization, which is a neighborhood citizen engagement nonprofit, which membership includes all residents and people who worked in the area, which is over 4,500 people. Finally, I want to become a regent of the university to give back to my community. Public service is one of the highest honors in democracy. Transparency and accountability to the people of Minnesota is what we expect and what we deserve as Minnesotans. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you for that opening statement. David?
That's a question. Thank you, Mrs. Sampson, for your remarks. In your written submission of questions to in your application, you indicated that one of your objectives would be to make university more affordable for students. Could you articulate or elaborate on how that might be accomplished, given the fact that you're not a regent yet and you're going to have to make some opinions on that?
I believe that keeping the university more affordable so that students aren't overburdened with debt after graduation is important. As I mentioned before, the amount of challenges that young people face include debt, include trying to find affordable housing, as well as jobs. And one of the ways in which I think that working to make college affordable would be to work with President Kaler and the staff to find different ways that are through our budget make classes more affordable. Whether that means to look to outside funding sources for the university, or work out or thinking outside of the box on how to cut costs to make college more affordable for students. Also, I think that ways of cutting costs to make college more affordable at the university would include cost savings through the use of technology at the university, as well as looking into how the university uses space and scheduling to perhaps cut costs, as well as, I think, having conversations with the president, staff, faculties, workers, and students so that they can be part of the solution that would drive down costs to make college more affordable.
Margaret?
You've served on a lot of governing boards. Can you pick one of those boards and think about what was the most complex, political, strategic, complicated issue that that board had to deal with, and what did you professionally contribute to that, either as a staff member or a volunteer?
And let me think about it for a moment.
Sure.
I think that one of as my role when I was at one of the years in the middle of, I think, my time at the Stevens Square Community Organization, we were looking at bylaws, and bylaws can be in terms of board limits, and that effectively is how long someone can be in power, which in itself is a powerful thing. And I was one of the people that a board member that volunteered to work on an ad hoc committee to examine the bylaws and then examine the times, the board term limits. And the reason why it was political and touchy in the neighborhood was because our neighborhood was going through a change, whereas before we were the majority of renters. and then we had new housing built, and then then condo conversions from apartments, and so then the board was kind of changing, and we were taking and examining the board term limits and the different types of people and the seats on the board to make sure that the neighborhood represented all the people living in it. So I worked on the small group that helped to put forth new term limits, and then the types of board members and the types of seating, so that it would include renters as well as as well as homeowners, as well as business people.
Sonia?
Mine is probably a follow-up to Margaret's question. Of all the experiences you've had, what do you think, what in particular most prepares you to help govern a global organization with its global challenges and opportunities?
Well, as you could, from my opening statement and the story about me, where I came through the university first as a student, then I worked part-time, then I worked full-time. So I understand understand being a student and what it meant to be a student, even when we were going through changes. So, for example, I was going to school as an undergraduate when we were switching from quarter system to semester system, as well as when I worked at the university and I worked in epidemiology, and, because it's a premier research facility, we had a lot of different people that we were responsible for and reporting to. So I believe that experience at the U, as being a student as well as full-time and part-time employee, helped to prepare me to govern, as well as although they're much smaller in comparison, the nonprofits that I've been on the board and my union that I'm a board member on, that governance isn't day-by-day management. It's what we can do now and then what is looking six months into the future and beyond. And I think for the university and for the small nonprofit such as Witness for Peace, that's the same type of mindset and the same kind of approach that I would have as a regent, just as I do at the Witness for Peace.
Jennifer?
Could you talk a little bit about access to higher education, what your thoughts are about making the university more accessible, specifically to communities of color in the state?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that the university should be a place that mirrors our community, and whether that be in... and that the U should be a reflection of what we are as a community. So if that means that recruiting people or making... I want to have the university be a place where, for example, kids, so that students in high school can be college-ready, or we help to get them college-ready, and that the university is a place that is on their list for higher education. I want them to look at the U and be like, that is me. That is me, rather than, oh, the U, I can never go there, or, oh, the U, there's, this or this or this barrier. So making, if that means, making it, going out into the community more to get kids and students ready and of all different economic backgrounds. As a union member and people, and as a person that works for unions, that I know that education is the way, is the ladder up to the middle class, and that by providing higher education opportunities, such as going to the university, to be ready to go to the university, that is that's the best way to and a union job to have to get into a middle class and to have a broader diversity and spectrum of people that are participating in the workforce.
Joanne?
Jessica, the University of Minnesota is also often referred to then as the economic engine for the state. Could you tell me what you would have in your kind of evaluation of metrics of how we evaluate that? How do we measure that? What do those metrics look like to make us the economic engine of the state?
Well, so we have the most impact in the 5th District, as well as we have the largest economic engine in Minnesota. First of all, I would look at what our graduation rates are, and whether that be 4 years or in general. I think those are important, as well as the number of jobs that the university can provide, so that we're still striving for excellence and being efficient. I also think that in addition to those things, that we're reaching out to the community, and that there's ways to measure that, whether that be not quantitatively but qualitatively. And I say that because I have experience working on qualitative research in epidemiology. So I think ways in which to measure the community impact too would be measures and metrics and measures for success.
But do you have an idea of what that measure would look like? I mean, other than saying we need to have them or there are, what would one look like for a community? What would be that measurement other than just graduation? Beyond that impact, how do you have any type of ideas about how we validate that statement?
Sure. Well, I would. That's a good clarification, so thank you. And I mean, I would look at graduation rates for and work with the president and the Board of Regents and staff to look at other universities in the United States and ones that are similar to us, and then set a percentage that would work. Do you want would you like a hard number?
That's okay.
Jim? Jessica, thank you for applying, particularly given your professional knowledge of the legislative process, and to go through this process here and there. If you are selected by this committee to go forward and in fact, elected by the Joint Convention, you would necessarily be following in the footsteps of some great previous regents, David Rowe, Steve Hunter, in being at least representative of, if not representing, the labor movement in Minnesota. Talk to us about the strengths and weaknesses of that perception, and would that be appropriate or with respect to your candidacy?
Sure. Well, I recognize that seats are on the Board of Regents are distributed geographically throughout the state, as well as the student and at-large seats. And certainly there are different types of there are business representatives on the board, as well as other perspectives. And I understand that we all wear many hats. And as I've stated before, that I bring a perspective that can relate to both professional students as well as blue-collar workers. So I think that as far as a labor seat, we all wear many hats. And if there would be the perception of having a labor board, I think that that we all wear many hats. And if there would be ever a conflict of interest, for example, or a perception of a conflict of interest, as I understand the Board of Regents has had in the past, recent past, that I would first, approach the board chair, as well as there are set rules and policies that the Board of Regents has used in the past to address those, and I would stand by those things.
Margaret, I'm going to go to Jerry first.
Sure.
You mentioned in your application that one of the challenges is to maintain and develop reputation as a premier research university. Give me some ideas of what that might be. What things do you need to do to develop that reputation?
Sure. So, yes, in my application, I've said that I've been a part of the research and discovery and the teaching and learning and outreach that is reflected in the very mission at the university, and it holds the university together. So I worked in school of public health, and we had rigorous standards, like I mentioned briefly before, as well as HIPAA training and reports to the primary investigators of the research, as well as our national funding sources that I've worked under, such as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, as well as National Institutes of Health. So I understand all that is part of, and thus that reporting system in itself and builds in accountability. Accountability that helps to maintain reputation at the University of Minnesota. So some of the things that I believe, one of the things that I believe that is helping the university be a premier research university that found in the accountability report. So it was the university's objective to accelerate transfer and utilization of knowledge for the public good. So upholding our public reputation as well as in the community as well as with other institutions. And I consider that giving back to the community as well as another example of the university mirroring our community. So part of that research that I was proud of at the university from the accountability report included 160 grants that were awarded to support both faculty and community partnerships that connected work to 28 different academic departments and touched 8 different cities within Minnesota, as well as 30 different counties. So whether it is the University of Minnesota School of Public Health Epidemiology, community grants in community-funded grants through the university or the Sudan Underground Research Facility where we study dark matter up on the Iron Range. I support that sort of accountability as well as being a driver and developing ways in which that we can have a safe place for people to experiment with their minds and with the ideas, because the University of Minnesota should be that place. And by having all the accountability built in and processes to follow, I believe that that's one of the ways in which we can continue being a premier research facility.
George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hazen, one of the responsibilities of the region is to evaluate the performance of the administration, particularly the president. What criteria would you use in evaluating the performance of the president?
Mm-hmm. So the criteria I would use to part of the job of regents would be to work with the president. First of all, I would listen to what he had to say and what he has set forth over 18 months ago for his goals for the university. So I would work with other boards of regents as well as student or anyone else, students or faculty or staff who would want to be involved in those conversations to hold him accountable and make sure that he's following the plan that he has laid out for the university. As well as probably look at traditional methods of graduation, looking at graduation rates and whether things in general are getting better at the university.
Margaret?
Let's turn to your current job, because you're only our second applicant, but our first applicant told us a lot about what he had done in his jobs. And let's turn to your job that you currently have rather than the research job in epidemiology. Tell us about that job, span of control. Do you supervise any people? What's your total number of volunteers you work with? What's your annual operating budget that you're in charge of? And what are you most proud of as you think about that job? You say, this is what I've done, and this I would like to bring as a skill to the regents.
Good. So I'm currently a field director, is my title, at the Minnesota AFL-CIO. And the Minnesota AFL-CIO is a organization of over 1,000 different affiliates, which are local unions throughout the state, which represent over 300,000 working men and women in Minnesota. So in general, the Minnesota AFL-CIO has an operating budget of a little over $3 million, and the budget that I'm partially responsible for, because Secretary Treasurer Steve Hunter is the one that's responsible for the main budget. But the budget that I work with my communications director, I believe is about $100,000, including everything. So some of the things that I do I started just about 4 years ago, and then before that worked the other jobs that you've heard of, is that I was originally hired to start social media, have a social media presence. So that means Facebook and Twitter and Flickr and all different ways of interacting online, because technology is important to how we communicate today. Technology is important to how we communicate with young people today. It's essential. And so I jump-started that, as well as overhauled our website and worked in general in communications that support our greater Minnesota affiliates. So through working on communications and preparing press releases and preparing people to be able to speak at with the media, or preparing people to lobby their legislator, in greater Minnesota mainly, I've learned a lot about our needs for in southeastern Minnesota. I've learned a lot about the Iron Range. I've learned a lot about Duluth beyond going to school there. And I've learned a lot about our communities and how we all work together, and how it's very important to keep a separate identity at the same time. Some of the other projects that I work on include Women in Leadership. And that is a program that has recently been started, and one that I have a strong passion for, which encourages women in the labor movement to run for leadership positions within their union, as well as community, as well as elected offices in public life. And we've had conversations with women who are interested in that, as well as we use research to guide the different types of trainings that we do. And then the other part of my job that I love is that I've mentioned working with younger people, and I spearheaded the effort called the Minnesota Young Workers, which engages young people who are in unions or want to be in unions, from the ages of 18 to 35, roughly, to talk first, identify the different challenges that they are facing in life, in at their workplace, in school if they're in school, and at home or in their community. So, working with the young people from the Twin Cities as well as in Greater Minnesota to provide training, as well as fun things to do, because you have to have fun once in a while. So on that, one of the things that I'm most proud of at my time at the Minnesota AFL-CIO and in the labor movement is becoming a member of the advisory council that I mentioned in my opening statement, as well as lobbying to get over 800 young people here from all over the United States to see Minneapolis, because that is a place I'm very proud of, Minneapolis and where I live. Because I also think that the places that we spend most of our time are where you work and or go to school and where you live. So we had 800 young people here at the Hilton in downtown Minneapolis for 3 days to do intensive trainings and workshops, as well as hear from young leaders, celebrities, and comedians from around the country. And that included workshops, as well as a march downtown to the light rail station to to advocate for transportation, for alternative transportation options, as well as things called an unconference, where you use the knowledge that the participants of the convention bring, and then they suggest what to teach, and then they recruit. So the knowledge was coming from within and from without. So that's one of, and the most important part of that event is that they got together, they had energy, they networked, and then they took all of that information back to the communities where they live to hopefully develop more knowledge and more power to change where they work and change where they live for the better.
Again, really in your last answer, which was an excellent answer, to reference technology and your utilization of it. What implications do you see for higher education in general and for the University of Minnesota as a result of advances in information technology?
Technology is only an opportunity, and the implications of that are more learning and quicker learning. I think that using the use of technology does require an investment to be made now that will pay off in the future. So technology is expensive, but I grew up in the time when I don't even know how old I was, but my dad brought home a Commodore 64 personal home computer. And since then, I had technology and computers in school throughout and in my work throughout the whole time. And so there are people and students now that have, you know, even from birth, they play with their parents' cell phones. They know how to use iPads, and they aren't even two. I've seen it. My best friend's child knows how to use that. And so I think that having technology at the university and in every classroom, no matter if it means in the math department or in the master's in advocacy and political leadership classroom, that it's important. I also think that even though there would be an investment now for technology, that down the line would include cost savings through the use of technology. Also, I think that enhanced use of the MOOC system for online learning is important to keep moving forward. As well as, I was looking at the other day, developing the possibility of developing different apps that students could use to pay their tuition, for example, to sign up for classes, and that would make it easier for people to be successful at the university.
Talk with me a little bit about open coursework and MIT and Stanford and John Hopkins and Coursera and all of those implications for higher education.
I think that, again, the way providing online learning would be another way and another perspective for people and for students to access education if they can't attend the university, that would make it closer if they couldn't actually get to campus. And as far as the implications, I guess that, again, technology can only be seen as an opportunity to advance. And, of course, with any sort of technology, just like in research, that you have to have, you know, secure so that the students feel secure in their coursework, whether it be research or whether it be, turning in an assignment or giving sensitive information over the Internet and online learning, I have confidence that the U and the staff and the administration that would be administering that they would keep it safe.
Jim?
To follow up on that, you mentioned MOOC. That obviously is there are those who believe that's an existential threat to a university or the university or universities of our size. Elaborate a little bit more. It's a follow-on on this last question. But what is education going to be like with that in mind, and what's the university going to be like in responding to it, and how would you see the university responding to those challenges or opportunities, I might say?
So I have this, where I work and in the labor movement, there is the same type of questions that I face when I'm working with young workers, as well as when I'm talking to more seasoned advocates and seasoned workers. And people are afraid at first of technology. And that people often say to me, and they said, well, that's no substitute for a one-on-one conversation. And I agree. Technology is not a substitute for a one-on-one personal conversation. At the same time, and as a community organizer, I believe that technology is not I believe the same thing, that technology isn't a substitute for a one-on-one conversation. But then at the same time, we can't ignore that life is moving faster now and that people are able to do things quicker, so that I think using the use of MOOC as well as traditional ways of education has to be the wave of the future, and we have to look more into that. And that if that means, again, if people have questions about that, that what's always the answer? You ask them why, and then you educate. So you educate people and telling more people about the benefits of MOOC.
Ardell.
Well, Ms. Hasten, first of all, thank you for your willingness to be considered as a regent candidate. Recently, the Wall Street Journal had quite a report on the university being top-heavy in the administration and administrative personnel, followed up by the Star Tribune commenting on that as well. How would you, as a regent, respond to that, I'll say, accusation, and what responsibility do you see the Board of Regents having in that particular question or issue?
Yes, I did read that and the responses this past week in the paper. And first of all, when I read it, I thought that it provides an outside perspective to what it is perceived to be happening at the university, and outside perspectives and as many perspectives as possible is one of the ways that we can look critically at things. The other thing that I thought is that in addition to having an opportunity to look at it, is that as a Board of Regents, I mean, I would work with President Kaler and the Board of Regents in general. I think I would work with President Kaler and then any other groups that should be part of the conversation to address that, if the president and the administration and staff feel that that's something that needs to be addressed. I think that, yeah, it's a way to look, it's an opportunity, and then also if it is perceived to be something that needs to be worked on, that we would have those conversations so that everyone could be a part of the solution, as well as knowing that the time is now, that President Kaler has set out different ways in which he's already looking at cost savings and ways to make the university more efficient, so that supporting him in the work that he does would be one of the roles that a Board of Regents would take.
Jessica, we're down to about the last 5 to 7 minutes. We've got a few more questions, and then we'll move on to the closing statement. Jennifer, and then I'm going to go to Dan.
Jessica, I'm going to be really blunt. I was thinking about the last time we picked on a community organizer nationally, which was our president, and how we always compare those skills to business. And I believe the regions need a great mix of talents and skills. tell us why your skills and what you've learned in your career thus far, and I'm sure you're going to do great things as you go on, is really critical to what the Board region is going to face in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, as you've heard throughout my interview today, is that I value a lot of different perspectives, and my decision-making style is consensus as much as possible. When you're working with 1,000 different local affiliates in Minnesota, you know, that becomes a lot of voices. One of the things that I do in the groups that I work with, whether it be the young workers or on the board at the Stevens Square Community Organization or in my local union, is that I listen to a solution. And because when you listen for a solution, the answer is usually found among us if it is for us. And that's the same approach that I would take at the board of regents. While I have high respect for the open meeting laws, that I would talk to the board, as well as check in with the other board regent and the other board of regents, and then also look to the chair for guidance in making sure that I respect the open meeting laws. So as far as the other skills that I bring. To the Board of Regents, that I would bring to the Board of Regents, is that I've had, so again, as a student, as a former employee at the university, and then as someone who works for 300,000 working men and women who pay my salary, and I remember that every single day in every conversation that I have, that I think it's important to take those perspectives, and then also be willing to think outside of the box as funding grows tighter and tighter. We're forced to do that, and that I think that thinking outside of the box and looking at non-traditional ways of solving problems and including as many voices as possible is something that I would take into the future as the Board of Regents, and as well as like I mentioned before. That there are business representatives that are people that wear the business hat on the board, and I do have a labor hat. I also have the fact that I'm a woman, as well as someone who has a couple of different degrees, as well as someone who can talk to a construction worker at one of our sites who we've received capital funding from, as well as go and prepare people to go talk to legislators. So I think I bring the lobbying experience as well as my experience and my expertise in community organizing to the Board of Regents.
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has to do with research commercialization. What's your view on research commercialization, and what role should it play in the university's funding future? Mm-hmm.
So with research commercialization, meaning corporate funding?
Meaning more using the research enterprise of the university to develop future funding streams. Right now, I think it's a significant portion of the university's revenue and in this area comes from one draw, that the patent is about to expire. So it's facing its own fiscal cliff, so to speak. And there's always particularly within the faculty, I think there's debate over what role should that play. Is it appropriate? Is it not? How do you approach that issue?
Well, I think that research corporatization, as well as the medical facilities, are complex. And I think that I would have to read more and learn more about that before I make any sort of judgments on that.
We've reached a time where we're at the end of our questioning period, and would invite you to make a few closing statements, and in particular, if there's a question you thought we should have asked, if you want to answer that, you're sure welcome to, but if you would make a closing statement.
Thank you. So thank you all again. It was very, very much a pleasure to meet all of you today, and for having me here for the time that I have had allotted. I thought you would grill me more on the labor seat, but So, yeah, I mean, I understand that I am I do look different from the other. I have a different set of skills and expertise compared with the people that are currently on the Board of Regents. But I also think that it is a time at the university and in Minnesota that we are poised to we are making a better Minnesota together. I also think that it is the time when we have to work together, especially to create better jobs, because, you know, we have a lot of jobs that are going away, and that jobs and providing that higher education that will make people ready for those jobs in Minnesota, the time is now for that. And I believe that things that I have done have led me to this and to apply for the to be a Board of Regents at the University of Minnesota, and that I think that I bring the perspective of being the student and employee as well as representing 300,000 working people that that I can help make that make the University of Minnesota a better place working together. So, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.